What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Progressives Abroad podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is your host, Boutique, and I'm really happy to be here, back here with you on the mic, speaking to the world. I did take a little summertime hiatus, as you may have noticed, and I hope that you're finding ways to enjoy the summertime too. If you're in the Northern Hemisphere, I know it's the winter down south, but I hope everybody's finding something to keep themselves sane during these crazy COVID, crazy political, crazy social upheaval, crazy everything, crazy times. So I hope you're finding ways. I know it's not possible for everybody. I know we're all in various situations, but if you're listening, I wish you well. And you can always drop us a line and share tips. How do you stay sane during these times? I know myself, getting outside is really important. Staying healthy, eating healthy, staying physically healthy, you know, going for a jog, doing my push-ups, all this kind of stuff is very important. But again, all this stuff is not easy. It's not easy for me. It's not easy for anybody. And it's easier for some people than others. So just try to stay healthy. I was lucky during my summer hiatus to go on a bicycle ride where I biked for a couple weeks down the coast of Norway. And I'm very privileged, very lucky to be able to do that here, considering that our numbers were quite low at that time when it comes to COVID, as well as we do have really amazing open laws about where you can go on your bike, or if you want to go hike and where you want to camp. You can pretty much camp anywhere. So anybody that tells you Norway is this crazy expensive country and you can't go there, well, they don't live like we do, because I don't have any money and am, you know, able to cruise around on the bike and pretty much camp anywhere. So bring your tent, bring your sleeping bag, come on over to Norway and have a good time. But not now, because it's not possible to come over here right now from most countries, and actually pretty much from all countries since the borders are closing again. Nonetheless, everybody, crazy times. Crazy times politically. Now, I just want to address that, you know, most of us are, if you're in the United States, or maybe if you're in anywhere in the world, most of us are probably quite disappointed with the choices for the presidential election right now. A few words on that. I just want to remind everybody that presidential election is just one election. There's tons of other things to inform ourselves about, like all the down ballot elections, like the local city elections, state elections. There's all these other elections that we need to stay on top of. And in many cases, a lot of these elections will, for the individuals, for our daily lives, might end up being even more important than the presidential election. So we got to make sure we're getting our progressive policies passed at all of these levels. And in any way you can really impact your life, through your job, through your platform, whatever. Ask yourself, how can I make an impact? Because of course, we want to vote, and we want to vote for a good presidential candidate. Of course, we'd love to vote for Bernie or somebody like that. This is what we're dealing with. So we're going to be dealing with that throughout, you know, up until the election, and we're going to be dealing with that afterwards, because the fight does not end or begin at the election. It's forever going. So anyways, let's focus on what we can do. Okay, everybody, let's focus on what we can do, because climate change is still happening. People are still going into debt. What can we, people are, you know, kids, we're having, people are having trouble going to school, all this stuff, all these problems. Racism is rampant, all these problems. So let's figure out, what can we do? What can I do as an individual beyond just this one vote? There's many other things we can do. So let's talk about it. As for today's show, we're taking a little trip over to Asia, as we have once again the Bull Moose Progressive himself, Mr. Lee J. Heller. He is the host of the Bull Moose Progressive podcast, as well the Joy of Liberty podcast, which he hosts with his father. DJ, welcome back to the show, my man.
Great to be back. It's certainly been a hell of a time since the last time we talked, so definitely no shortage of things to discuss, especially from our unique perspective abroad. I'm in Taiwan, you're in Norway.
Yeah.
Both countries, I think, are pretty good places to be right now. At least I think Taiwan is. Personally, I don't know about Norway. I can only hope that it is.
Yeah, definitely. Let's get into that. I was gonna see like how yeah, so you're still in Taiwan, because I remember last time we talked, it was like we've texted a bit in between too, so it sounds like there's a lot going on. So just let's catch up a little bit. What, got any summer updates?
Sure. Well, generally speaking, Taiwan's a great country. It's great to be here. We both had the experience with teaching. We had experience. It's pretty good. You know, teaching internationally is kind of the same no matter where you go as far as the actual job itself. But Taiwan's a great country to be in. I've actually been, I'm starting a new teaching job on Monday. So I've actually been exploring Taiwan, and I've been trying to hit up each of the major cities, and there isn't that many, so you can really, it's actually possible to do. I took the high-speed rail all the way down south, took some pictures, going to upload all those eventually. But just to reiterate a little bit what I said last time, is that Taiwan, at least from my experience, the whole coronavirus situation has been pretty minimal here. I think we had very low actual cases, and everyone just wears a face mask on the bus or the train, and they take your temperature. And that's pretty much it. Everything else has been pretty much normal. So
interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It seems very interesting to me, just in general, how the Asian countries have really seemed like they've done a phenomenal job for the most part. Like like you said, we're both into the international teaching scene. So I first got my start in South Korea, and I still try to like keep up with, you know, South Korean news, because I just have a general interest in the country. And I was just like, I remember when the whole thing started, I was just like, knowing like South Korean mentality and how everybody kind of bands together when necessary to like, you know, do things. I mean, it has its pluses and minuses. And I don't know if it's similar in Taiwan, but there, I just expected it to kind of be handled properly. I know they have a fantastic healthcare system, and I know that people kind of
100%
go with the flow when it comes to these kinds of things, rather than getting all crazy with the, I don't know, protesting mask and stuff like that. So,
well, I'd say it's, at least in Taiwan specifically, it's three things. Obviously, it's, you know, it's an island, so it's very easy to clamp down and keep the virus from spreading. Two, they had experience with these kind of things with SARS back in the day, kind of spread over to Taiwan a little bit. So they've already had that experience, and they know how to do, how to prepare and deal with it properly. And three, and maybe you can tell me if you agree on this, and this is also something I actually learned from back in college, but the Asian countries have that more collectivist cultures. So they're more willing to understand that it's necessary to work together sometimes, which obviously not so much in the United States, which is more focused on the whole individualism. And, you know, they protesting wearing masks just isn't a thing here. It's just like they usually wear masks just when people are sick normally. When there's not a pandemic, if someone's sick, it's like the polite thing to do is just to wear a mask so you don't spread your illness to somebody else.
That's right. Yeah.
Just a cultural thing. So they were already, their culture already preemptively helped them out, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that was a huge advantage in a lot of the countries in Asia, is that there is that collective mindset. I attributed it to, I mean, I saw like the good sides and the bad sides of that when I was, I know, working in Korea, which was, you know, especially at like the schools that I worked at, very strong hierarchy in the school system, like even in your daily work life. Like, you're a teacher, but then you have this teacher above you. Like, I was an English teacher, but then above me, I had the head English teacher. And then above them, they had the head teacher. And then above them, they had the vice principal. And then above them, they have the principal. And you kind of have this hierarchy built into, like, I think all kinds of business scenarios in these countries, and maybe just in societal structures, this Confucian kind of hierarchy whether or not people like directly recognize that connection from like the olden days, it still exists, just like embedded in a lot of these cultures. So I think that's a really good point. I think that just cultural element of hierarchy and banding together and stuff definitely was a good thing in this case.
Yes. Well, like I said, let's be clear. Like, it's not all good or all bad. It's always, I always try to say, like, my guiding principle, whether it's in life or politics, is try to be nuanced. Like, don't let your ideology prevent you from dealing with reality. And I feel like that, I feel like in America, it's getting more and more the other way. Like, we're just going to stick to the ideology no matter what. And even if, you know, reality or the fact is staring us in the face, we just refuse to acknowledge or do anything about it. So, but, you know, again, it's different. Like Taiwan, you know, it's, you live in a country that, you know, they just had the presidential election earlier in the year. The Tsai Ing-wen got reelected, which was a landslide compared to, you know, she got like 60-65%, which is a landslide in election standards. And I find that surprising, because you figure that China would try to have try to do something to interfere. But it's like, again, it's a good, Taiwan is a good example of what a country can be that actually has a functioning democratic system, but also actually cares about its citizens having a good quality of life. Like, I don't even know if Taiwan is officially considered a social democracy, but it definitely has, you know, policies and institutions that definitely go in that direction.
Yeah, you know, and I would be interested, I don't know, I would be interested to know a little bit more about the Taiwan elections. I don't know how much you know about that, but I mean, was there any, like, you know, what was like the media coverage of that when happening?
Yeah, I mean, I like I said, I'm not the biggest expert, but I did pay, you know, I did pay enough attention, because I kind of take that as a policy when I'm like, when I was living, I was actually living in Hong Kong during the Umbrella Revolution.
Okay.
In 2014. And I always say, like, as a foreign resident somewhere, I have like no, I officially have like no opinion, because it's not my place or right to really get involved, but I like to be informed. But I'd say, like, in Taiwan, it's kind of like the US, but you do, there's like two major parties. There's the KMT, which is the old holdover from like the nationalist China and Chiang Kai-shek. And they're, and this is my friend who's half Taiwanese, half American, telling me this, they're basically like the Republicans of Taiwan. They still want to do reunification. They still typically will side with Beijing and all that. And then you have like the, I think it was like the Democratic Progressive Party is the, you know, basically more and more towards Taiwan being officially independent, because Taiwan's complicated, because you have all this, like, it's not officially a country and all this nonsense, but that's the main, that's like always the main issue in Taiwanese politics, is Taiwan going to be officially independent Taiwan, or will it reunite with China someday? And the funny thing is, you know, Tsai Ing-wen got reelected, and but they had her main opponent, and he was basically like, they were calling him the Donald Trump of Taiwan, because he was like just like this loudmouth guy that was just talking shit basically, and it was mostly full of crap. Except the difference is he lost big time. And it was so bad, he was mayor of this, of, I think it was like the second largest city of Taiwan. But while he was running for president, he neglected to do all of his mayoral duties. So he became the first Taiwanese mayor in history to be recalled. So it wasn't just that he lost the presidency, he lost his mayorship. So, I mean, they don't mess around here. You know what I mean? But again, it's like, and it's not even that. It's like, it's not that hard. Like, you can, like I said, you could take the high speed rail from like the top to the bottom of the country in like an hour and a half. So there's like no excuses to not still be mayor and run for president. So, but you know, when they're, like I said, long story short, when their politicians suck, they take out the trash.
So, wow. Yeah,
that's a very oversimplified version of it. Yeah,
to clarify, so because this is interesting to me. So this politician that was kind of the quote unquote Donald Trump of Taiwan, he was part of the party that was he also
the KMT. The KMT.
And that was like pro like unification or pro more
basically
like
China they're the holdover. The KMT was the party of Chiang Kai-shek, and remember, most people forget Taiwan was basically a police state until the 80s, so it was like a one-party police state, and that's the old KMT, the old holdover. And originally their plan was, we're going to take over the mainland again someday, and then of course they slowly moved away from that. But the ultimate goal is KMT wants to reunite with China someday, somehow. It's always very vague what that actually means. And of course, what happened to Hong Kong just scared the shit out of everyone. So no one, long story short, they're kind of fading from relevance, because obviously nobody wants to do that anymore with the way things are going. So they're kind of lost in the wilderness of what they're actually going to do politically. But yeah, the Tsai Ing-wen just got reelected, and I think she's term limited. So, but that's where we're at in Taiwan. I did want to say one last thing, which was hilarious during the presidential campaign, is that the only scandal that they really found was really happening around, that you basically had some people on the other side just like basically falsely claiming that her PhD was fake. Like she
I heard about that.
Yeah, she went to London School of Economics and got her PhD, and then they tried to like just say it was fake. So it was just completely like made up. And even London School of Economics was like, no, it's real. But I always joke with people, it's like, I wish that was my president's only scandal, was that their PhD was fake. You know what I mean? Like that's the best they could come up with, was just, yeah, she's faking being smart. You know, I'm just like, whatever, bro. Okay. And then of course that guy lost embarrassingly, and he lost his job as mayor. So,
so yeah, this is interesting too, like going off on like a little bit of a tangent, but like, I mean, cause I think one thing, and I don't feel, I mean, I feel like I'm very fascinated by this, but I don't feel like completely like the most well-educated person to talk about US, China, Taiwan, Hong Kong mess basically. Because I mean, you know, what I find really interesting right now is that, it's very confusing for a lot of people. So I'm interested if you hear anything about it over there, like on the ground, is that, you know, of course, there's a lot of push for, you know, Hong Kong to be independent and Taiwan to remain independent and Taiwan to remain independent. But at the same time, it's like these kind of ideas seem to have been like co-opted very much by like a lot of right-wing people in like conservative think tanks in the United States. And they've also teamed up, so it seems, with this group, and I don't know if they're so present in Taiwan, but like the Falun Gong.
Yes, I know a little bit about them. I think they're a religious sect.
Yeah, so they're like the largest. They're
basically persecuted by the Chinese
persecuted government. Group. Yeah. And you know, from what I've found out, they have a lot of ties in the United States with like this One America network, and with this a publication called the Epic Times. And
yeah, I was gonna say, and it's like, that's like crazy conspiratorial stuff. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact that that's what they're doing isn't conspiratorial. It's like well documented that they're like one of the biggest funders for like the Falun Gong works with the Epic Times. It's like a product of the Epic Times, or it's a product of the Falun Gong.
Yeah, I think that they fund. I think that's like their official newspaper, basically.
Yeah, and they propose like a lot of pro-Trump. Produce a lot of like pro-Trump kind of propaganda. So it's very interesting how the anti-China sentiments that we're really starting to hear a lot of in the United States and like in the media. Is being kind of co-opted with this, freedom for Taiwan, freedom for Hong Kong, like whole revolution. I mean, have you witnessed any of this like on the ground in Taiwan?
Well, like I said, suffice it to say, it is a pretty complicated situation because for all intents and purposes, Taiwan isn't even officially acknowledged as a country. Which is sad because it is, I consider it probably one of the most, you know, well put together, you know, democratic, even you could even say, you said, regulated capitalist countries out there. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to that whole situation, like, I realize this as I'm getting older, like, especially in American politics, is that so much political action and rhetoric is done in bad faith. Mm. You know, most people don't really believe what they're saying, or it's always pushing for some ulterior motive. So, like, I feel like put it this way, if the West actually cared about freedom and democracy, we wouldn't be buying billions of dollars worth of Chinese garbage. It's not more simple than that. And of course, because they want China's money. And that's a historical thing. I mean, even in that, again, back in college, they call that hundreds of years ago, myth of the Chinese market. It's like, if we just keep moving out West, we can eventually make a bunch of money in China. So this is just the modern day version of that. And we'll keep placating the Chinese because we want, you know, it's good for the economy. Okay. Like, for example, we buy billions of dollars worth of Chinese, you know, communists in three quote signs. And then Cuba's still bad. No one's ever been able to give me a legitimate reason why there's a difference. I mean, I know the real reason, it's money. Because all Cuba has to offer is sugar cane and cigars. And, you know, China has a billion people we can sell our crappy movies to. But the point I was trying to make is that weird correlation, the enemy of the enemy is my friend. So I feel like a lot of people in the Trump administration and the Falun Gong, it's more of a, well, we'll support you because you'll support us in the in long. There's not really necessarily like an ideological friendship there. It's more of a you're supporting me, I'll support you. Because I mean, if we're breaking down to it, Trump doesn't really care about anything except for what keeps him out of prison in a general sense. You know, he just does what he thinks is best for him. So he doesn't really have any, I guess, ideological guidance to anything he's doing. So
it's really crazy though, because I mean, this whole like anti-China stance that, I mean, it's not just Trump. It's turning into like, and it's not even just like the Republican Party, because there's just like people all over the place that are, you know, it's like just becoming a bigger and bigger thing. This is something I really worry about, kind of like going into the future, because I mean, if you look back, you know, China's been winning for a long time. You know what I mean? Like on an economic level, like, I mean, I think it's been since like the 1980s or 70s when there was like a major shift in power there, and they like turned more towards the West and like started, you know, becoming much more of like a less communistic, like more at least like economically capitalistic,
maybe, well, that's
like
the thing,
socially communistic society. You know,
I wanted to bring that up because, you know, a lot of these words, and that's part of the problem, and especially always bringing it back to where from is American discourse, because words and names and labels mean nothing in the end. You know, everyone's always trying to smear somebody as a socialist or a communist or a Marxist, and they might not even know what that means. And I always say, yeah, because was it North Korea's real name is the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Therefore, by that logic, it should be the most democratic and free country in the world. Clearly, it's not. So while people can call China communist, it is, but it isn't. It's communist in the sense that if you have an authoritarian communist country, then they end up censoring people, you know, locking people up, political prisoners. But when it comes to economics, I mean, it's probably one of the most capitalistic countries I've ever been in. You know, it's not like I've been to Cambodia and I've been to Laos. Like, these are countries that are actually like, I didn't see any McDonald's there, for example, or any KFC. So the way I see it, if, you know, I'm not an expert, I wish I go back to school for this, but I would say the best thing you could say is China is more or less a rigid state capitalist society. So the worst of both systems. Like, it has the censorship, it has the, you know, no freedom of speech, and also has like lack of regulation. So that's, remember that was years ago when they were selling us all of our, like, the children's toys were poisoned and the dog food was poisoned. It's because they don't care, you know? So
it's made of like crappy materials. And
exactly. They don't care. So,
yeah. Then Walmart buys it, you know what I mean? And sells it to people. I mean, so it's bad on all ends. You know what I mean?
Right. So unfortunately, yeah, China is the worst. It has the worst of both systems, if you want to look at it that way, in a socialist and capitalist sense. But I mean, again, if the Western world really cared about those ideas, we could easily stop supporting them, and then they wouldn't be as powerful as they are. It's just that simple. But it's not that simple in an economic sense, because we want to buy their crappy dog food and poison toys, I guess.
I mean, that's what's so crazy to me. Like, the thing is, it really starts to worry me, because number one, it's just like they're starting in a way like already like a new Cold War, you know. And they want that. It seems to me, at least, I mean, it seems to me that we could really swing that way if people keep buying into it. You got these people like, I mean, you know, like Steve Bannon, who left the Trump administration. He was his national security advisor for like the first year, and he left. He's like evil genius, like super anti-China, like super America first. And like, he's out there just like running around. Like, he's in this like think tank, like the Committee on Present Danger China, and just,
yeah,
like, stirring up all this propaganda, you know?
I was gonna say, didn't he go on like a goodwill tour of Europe recently, trying to like lift up a bunch of like right-wing movements in Europe?
Yeah. So. He's got people like that running around, and he's got his like podcast, like with the it's just horrible. It's like, I mean, I have to listen to it occasionally for a little bit just to like see what insanity is going on, but it's just this like really like a lot of like important people, like quote unquote important and powerful, scheming, like people from war criminals to all kinds of people just coming around like stirring the pot, the anti-China pot. It's like, not that we should support, really. I think the crazy thing about China too, and you might see this, you know, you're a little bit closer, like relatively, but I just think People talk so much unfounded smack on China when I'm sure there's a lot of crazy stuff going on over there. I don't doubt that whatsoever. But like, again, it's just like, we're going to point our fingers at it's going to be Russia. Is it going to be China? Where is it going to be? Who are we going to invade next? Like, who are we going to start some shit with next? You know what I mean? And this is the big one. You know, because the thing is, you know, there has to almost be, if our government keeps going the way that it's going, which I think doesn't really matter on which party wins the next election. If it keeps going the way that it's going, then there's like almost like no choice but to start some stuff with China, because China is winning big time. I mean, they're building the road, building the one belt, one world, whatever it's called, you know, they're taking over all, very strategic. Like,
well, and they're built, and that's like the sad truth. No one's talk about it. It's like, you know, look how broken our system is, bloated, corrupt, inefficient, ineffective. To like right now, they both House and the Senate are in recess while millions of people are losing their health insurance and the economy's collapsing. But with your totalitarian Chinese government, we'll build 3,000 miles of high-speed rail in like a week.
Yeah, so and the like thing the is
trade-off, you know?
Yeah, and the thing is like, I mean, my thing is I don't like the, you know, it's like, because I don't like the way any of this is going, but it's so much bigger than like the little person. Like, you know, many times we're like, what can we do about it? Because I mean, it's like, I don't like the way the states are going, and I find it very admirable in a way, although it's probably, I don't know what that China's plan is, like what their intentions really are. But all I do know is that I do see crumbling west and like rising east, and I see like who's winning in this coronavirus situation, who is going into like all of these countries in Africa and South America and buying up the ports and like all these different, you know, middle Asia, Central Asia, all these countries, who's like really the new power. And I mean, we've been seeing
right well, and it's, I mean, I'm not an expert by any means. You can really go through many different roads on this discussion, but I'll put it this way. I feel like China is doing 21st century imperialism, right? And they have their legacy. Like they've it's kind of like this resentment they have, because for a long time, I mean, my friend, he's half Taiwanese, technically culture, you can have that argumentation if you're Taiwanese is the same thing as Chinese. But basically, China, even the word China, it is of itself, means middle kingdom, which is supposed to be this whole like different stages of like you have earth and like the middle realm and then you have like heaven. So they've always, even from the beginning, middle kingdom basically means they're like the middle step between the earth and heaven. So they've always had this like superiority, I guess, complex in their culture. But reality is they always got their asses kicked. You know, they had like the Boxer Rebellion, you know, the Opium Wars, Japan. So they always got their asses kicked in many different ways, which went against their whole cultural identity. And now it took them a long time, but now they're finally in a position of strength. And instead of, you know, we're still playing the 20th century where we're just going to send in people and invade your country and kick out and murder your leaders and hopefully everything works out, and it rarely does. But China's going to Africa and be like, hey, we'll build all your infrastructure, we'll build your buildings, we'll build your roads, you'll be in debt to us forever, but at least you'll have some nice buildings and roads to look at. And I feel like that's basically where they're at, and they don't even have to invade in a military sense if they're just like economically building things up and taking economic colonization of Africa, basically. That's how I see it. But when things get bad, I feel like a lot of these African countries just be like, thanks for the roads, and get lost when the shit goes down.
I mean, they're not just the roads, because I mean, one thing that you know, they're doing is, you know, they're building the roads, they're building like the public transportation, and I think the big one really is they're buying out a lot of building and buying a lot of ports. And the thing is like, I mean, I'm against all kinds of imperialism and like all kinds of empire, you know. So the reason why I'm fascinated by this topic and I wanted to bring it up is just because you know, anybody listening out there, I mean, I don't think either of us on this show are like super well educated in this thing, but in this topic, but it is a topic that we should all educate ourselves in more, because there is like a serious amount of anti-China propaganda like slipping in to the media and the news, and it's coming right out of like a lot of like politicians' mouths on both sides. And yeah, while right now, especially if you're like listening, you know, within the United States or wherever, in the UK or whatever, it's, you know, very concerned right now with like the presidential elections, and like, I mean, hopefully people are even more concerned of local elections, but it's also, you know, this is a big thing about a big thing in foreign policy, and it's gonna become a bigger thing soon. With a lot of people in power, I think, it seems like, are ready to start some smack with China big time.
Well, and that's the problem. And I, just like I said earlier, I feel like most of the time it's all done in bad faith. You know, most of these people, like, again, all the people that complain, this is what's so frustrating, is that like all of American political discourse like exists in an alternate reality. Like, whether it's Trump, Republicans, or Democrats complaining about China, but then they still implement policy that just gives them a bunch of money. So it's all just like, in and of itself, it's a bunch of nonsense. Like, the way I see it, we should, at least me personally, I want to be, instead of focusing on being anti-China, I'd rather be pro-Taiwan, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like, we should be supporting countries that represent the values that we supposedly agree on and supposed to support. So, and clearly we're not. Taiwan is not considered, it's not part of the UN because it's weird, because of China. Basically, anything that Taiwan is, because we don't want to make China angry. So that's the kind of approach I want to take. And yeah, if Taiwan ever became officially an independent country, or like, let's say US officially acknowledges Taiwan, that might cause a problem. And again, this is just semantics, because for all intents and purposes, Taiwan is an independent country. It has, I mean, they have like fake embassies that they can't call them that, but America, the US has, it's called the American Institute in Taiwan. And it basically does everything a embassy does, but it's just not called an embassy. But I feel like if that happens, if let's say if Trump actually acknowledged or Taiwan as an independent country, that might be like the one thing I'd appreciate, but it'd also be done in bad faith, you know. I feel like it's just a pawn in this whole geopolitical game, unfortunately. And if things get bad, I feel like Taiwan is one of the first to suffer from some sort of big, major, horribly complicated situation that might happen going forward. Like you said, if things actually get heated up, because we've had a lot of like Chinese planes like crossing into Taiwanese airspace a lot recently.
Yeah, just, I think. That's the thing too. That's what worries me the most, is because let's say this: there are these, the at least in the U.S., what I've been observing, and also looking into some of the stuff like the Epic Times, and I mean, there's like literally during the pandemic, or it's still happening, but like a few months ago, there was a lot of talk of people receiving like free issues of the Epic Times on their doorstep, and like big cities around the United States, like in like, you know, San Francisco, all over the place, you know, people are just like receiving this stuff. And if you, and I've noticed more and more, like on Facebook and Twitter and all these things, I see people who are kind of, you know, leftists or whatever, posting from these, from the Epic Times, which is this, you know, Falun Gong backed newspaper and online publication. And I have to call them out and be like, hey, like, you know, because they'll actually, the Epic Times, they'll produce a lot of really like convincing articles, and also stuff that doesn't really have anything to do with like, you know, China US relations. They'll be like, they'll make some posts like, here's a, I remember the famous one that was going around a couple weeks ago or months ago was this, here's a video of a soldier who like came back from war and his mom didn't know he was home and he's going to surprise her like in the park, you know? And it was this like very heartfelt, gut-wrenching video that everybody can identify with. But the problem is that you click on that video, this is very clever propaganda, you click on that video, and then it, of course, it takes you to the Epic Times. And the next thing you know, you're reading the Epic Times. They also put out some advertisements that are like, from what I understand, I don't see it so much here in like, you know, abroad, but from what I understand, you know, they buy up a lot of YouTube advertising in the United States. So I've checked out some of their advertisements, and man, their advertisements are like mind-blowingly clever and almost like hypnotic.
Especially, well, and that's the thing,
like old people and stuff like this.
Yeah, well, and that's the problem. I was gonna say, my general statement, you know, when it comes, I feel like as much as it's great to be in this technological wonderland where we're able to talk to each other through the internet across halfway across the planet, social media has made, you know, again, to use the term fake news or just like false reality, has made it easier to spread misinformation and disinformation, whether it's intentional or not. And most of the time it is intentional. But the real issue comes to is, I always say when it comes to that up, when it's brought up online, is like the truth doesn't matter if people want to believe the lies. That's kind of my thing that I go with. And it's all about critical thinking. Cause at least for me, the way I see it, like I can tell, like, I don't know if you heard a while back, but there was like that plandemic video that was circulating around the internet, and they got my dad, and he somehow sent it to me on my phone. And I was like, and I didn't know what it was when he sent it to me. But I was just watching it for a few minutes, and I'm just like, something doesn't feel right watching this video. Like, just like internally, you know, critical thinking when it's like, and like, so actually stopped. I looked it up. What it was? Oh, okay. It's that BS conspiracy video that they basically banned from the internet. It's like, I was able to sniff it out pretty fast. The problem is most people, I feel, it's really easy to get scammed, whether you believe in it or not. Like, some people go want to watch InfoWars or Breitbart or but just like you said, it's easy to get like one video that's like about a soldier coming home, and then it kind of skews you into this. And if you're not vigilant, then you can get sucked into some black unbelieving, like about, you know, pedophile pizza shops, as was a famous conspiracy. Cause I just want to bring that up. I even remember in 2016, and this, I just distinctly remember this.
QAnon craziness.
Well, not even that, but it was like, it was an article that looked like it was from ABC, and it said, Obama is going to postpone the election in 2016. And I'm like, oh, well, that seems quite outrageous to be true. And all I had to do was like, look. And it was like the hyperlink was, it was fake. It was like a fake, someone made an article that looked like it was from ABC, but it just totally made up and fake. And I feel like most people either can't or don't figure that out. You know, it's very easy to get suckered into false information, but even more so if you want to believe the false information. And I feel like that's the, and on both sides, you know, I feel like we should always be trying to find, I always try to get news sources from multiple outlets, and then somewhere in there is the truth. But, you know, some, whether you're watching Fox News 12 hours a day or MSNBC 12 hours a day, you're not getting the full story. And interestingly enough, my dad was telling me he's an MSNBC guy, even though I kind of made him realize how propagandistic that is in and of itself for like the mainstream Democrats. But he only stopped watching it because they got too greedy, and they've basically like tripled the amount of commercials in every show because they're getting closer to the election. So more people are watching, so they have more commercials, and that's what turned him off. So at least their own greed basically made my dad stop watching him. So I find that pretty interesting. Just like if you're on Facebook, you watch a video, and then that ad's about to start, like, ah, never mind. I'm not, this video isn't important enough for me to watch an ad for. That's kind of how I see it now.
Yeah, I mean, that's really crazy too, because I think that's always been like a huge problem. I mean, with especially media in the States, and like now online is just like so much I mean, the advertising are the basically the donors, you know, of the media. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a less important example, but for example, like I am a sci-fi fan, so sometimes, you know, on these Facebook groups, they're always posting like, you know, Star Trek news, Star Wars, and then they're all like these like fake news. So it's like, is it like, it's always weasel words, like, is it true that CBS is going to do this, 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 and this? And all these company, all these like pop culture websites just make shit up basically just to get ad revenue. And that's the problem, is that it's all about the money. It's all about the revenue. It's all about the ads. And clickbait. Clickbait. And the truth is secondary to the profits. So there's like many layers, just like you said, it's the donors, but also the people who just want to make money is the primary source of all of most mainstream media. And I feel like that's the main problem.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is one thing. I mean, I've always been a huge advocate of media literacy, you know, I mean, because I mean, as a teacher, like as a social studies teacher, it's always like the number one thing I have grilled my students on is, oh, where'd you get that information from? You know, oh, where are your sources, your citations? I mean, it's that stuff that we all like used to hate back in the day, you know, through college or whatever, or like through high school. Oh, I got to cite my sources. But it's the most important thing. You got to follow the source in any information you get from the media. And you have to double and triple and quadruple check it. And it's just like that with politics. You got to follow the money. You got to see, where are these people getting money from? Oh, of course, these people don't support Medicare for All because they get all this money from this healthcare. I mean, it's weird. I feel like for our generation, maybe this becomes easier because we're more like, media, the internet savvy, maybe do some better at doing research. But I mean, definitely not for everybody. I mean, but I know at least in my own personal experience, and like with a lot of people I know, it's like people are reading, but the problem is now we're getting so much information that I don't know what it is. You gotta learn how to check your sources. You gotta learn how to be media literate. I mean, if I could spread one thing to the world, basically, you know, it's like check your sources.
Yeah, I know, put it this way. I know it's kind of lame to say, but it's not easy to be free. And I'll explain what that means. Like, to be an actual active citizen and engage, it's a lot of work. Like, it's easier. It's like freaking Blade Runner, man. I mean, but he basically said that it's easier to be a slave. Like, if you just do what media, or whether you're a Chinese citizen or American, if you just do what the media says or the party says, it's easier to just accept all the information they tell you instead of actually analyzing it and figuring it out for yourself. So, for example, I want to kind of bring it back to China. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like the reason that this is just my theory for a while. Again, I always just say I'm not an expert. Maybe someone can support me. I feel like that the whole like ideology of communism worked out better in China because part of the communist idea is the atheism aspect. And if, you know, they were mostly like Confucius and stuff, so that's not really like a straight up religion, as opposed to like the Soviet Union or Eastern Europe having like crush the Christianity. But also going back to, like you said, you know, Confucianism is all about respecting your elders, do what your elders say, don't question your elders. So I always feel like it's always been part of the Chinese culture to kind of like follow directions and listen to your strong leader in whatever form that means. So that's what my half Taiwanese, half American friend said. Like I said, his mother's father came over on the boat with Chiang Kai-shek. So she was always pro KMT. And I always say the story, she is in America right now, and she's a Taiwanese immigrant, Buddhist, Republican Trump supporter. How the fuck does that work? And he always breaks it down to, it's because in her mind, it's because he's a strong leader. It just comes down to that baseline principle, that they're a strong leader. And that's actually why there's apparently a lot of pushback by Xi right now, because it's supposed to, my friend said, in China, it's always about, remember I told you about like the heavenly, you know, China's like a level to heaven. So about the mandate from heaven, like if the spirit gods basically want you to be a good ruler, you will be a good ruler. So if you start fucking up, that means you don't have like the divine inspiration anymore. So it's like a lot of philosophical and cultural norms that I feel like kind of fit certain ideological systems in China, because it's in Taiwan is still very, you know, it's a democratic country, but it still has the traditional philosophical. It's like I could walk to like a Taoist temple like 5 minutes away from where I live right now. You know, like there's so many temples in Taiwan still. Mm-hmm. So it's still a very big part of their culture. So I feel like that's part of the mindset here, and why my friend hates Confucianism so much as a Taiwanese American, because it's just like, again, it's always just about just basically do what your elders say and don't question them, because your elders are right no matter what. And I feel like that's part of similar falling into why people don't question their news sources, because if they're the leaders, they must be correct, you know. And that's just kind of my opinion on that.
Yeah, no, and the other thing is too, is I mean, that's a big, well, I mean, it's interesting because right now, like your friend's Trump supporting mom.
Yeah, it's like, very hilarious. Yeah.
But it doesn't quite surprise me because I mean, I don't know if she's associated with this, but going back to this Falun Gong, and for people out there that don't know what the Falun Gong is or who we're talking, it's basically if you've been in New York City or any big city or any downtown area and you see these people doing Tai Chi in the square with pictures of organ harvesting going on, this is the Falun Gong. That's a very oppressed group of people. I think the largest largest kind of like organized group in China outside of the Communist Party, and their whole thing is like they are anti-communist. So their whole thing is that Donald Trump was sent from God to crush communism in China. You know, this is what they're like documented this is their new thing right now for the past like 5 years. So it is weird how it's like, okay, like how these kinds of things can be spun. You know, it's like, okay, like we want to, you know, we want these people, of course, like not to have their organs harvested. And they seem so peaceful because they like do Tai Chi in the square and like hand out free pamphlets and stuff like that. But at the same time, they think that Donald Trump is sent from God to crush communism. And at the same time, depending on what your background is and what your literacy is and what your knowledge of history and stuff like that, like even me, I'm like, okay, yeah, I don't support communism and I don't think people should be treated like that. But Donald Trump, he's the guy that's going to come and crush communism. It's very like cult thinking. Anyway,
well, like I said, it's like enemy of the enemy is my friend. It's very, you know, most people are either acting in bad faith or they're acting for selfish intent. Like they don't even, like I said, they probably like, well, he's probably a piece of shit, but if he pisses off China, I'll take it. That's kind of very oversimplified in that situation. Because I feel like that's why, as great as Taiwan is, I feel like in the long run, if things don't get better and they get worse and worse and worse, China is going to be caught in the crossfire of this China and the West problem. And that's actually why I'm trying to find out or figure out how I can end up in Europe. That's my plan now. So now you can tell me about Norway and if my fantasy of Norway fits the reality of Norway or Europe in general.
Thanks for sticking around, everybody, for this conversation, and thanks for tuning in for part one of this discussion. We're going to follow up next week with part two of my discussion with Lee J. And, you know, just to follow up, I just want to make sure everybody, you know, is well aware, you know, we are not experts in a lot of these topics that we talk about, but we do have a lot of experience in living abroad, and that also means being informed about what's happening outside of the U.S. bubble. So I think it is important to have these conversations, especially about what's going on in Asia, especially right now with this topic of like anti-China rhetoric. Because most of what you're going to hear on the mainstream media, whether it's right or left leaning, is anti-China rhetoric. And that's not to say that there isn't a lot of messed up stuff happening over there in China. But as Lee J points out, most of these messages coming from the West and politicians are in bad faith, and that seems to be stirring up a lot of anti-China sentiments and perhaps support for new Cold War type tendencies, attitudes, and actions that we're already starting to see in like trade tariffs, various accidents over land in the South China Sea. So it's just something to keep in mind. Broaden your perspective, do your own research about, because things are not always what they seem, and there's one message that's being very dominant right now, and that's not looking too good in either direction. Anyways, if you like what we're doing, you can always tune in. Please subscribe. That's the best way you can help us right now on any of the podcast platforms. We even got a YouTube channel where you can listen to it on YouTube if you like to do that. So please subscribe everywhere you can. And of course, you can always help us out by donating us a coffee. We've got a coffee link. You can check that out down there. Or on our PayPal. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and get all the good news between now and then. And please, we really like when people send us messages. You can do that on Anchor. You can send us an audio message or an email at progressives abroad at protonmail.com. Really look forward to hearing from you with all your suggestions and recommendations, your thoughts. Please stay sane out there. Please stay safe out there. And until next time, give us a shout. Progressives abroad, over and out. See you later, everybody. We'll be right back.